Good morning and welcome to News24's Inside Pass podcast, episode 22. My name is Herman Mostert. I will not be joined by Lloyd Bernard. He's currently occupied at the moment, but I will be joined by our man from on the ground in Paris, Kanyiso Chwaku. The Springboks have moved from Toulon to Paris. It's a massive week for them. They're playing France in the quarterfinals at the Stade de France on Sunday. And there was a Bok training session yesterday. Big news from the camp is, or relatively you could say, the team is only going to be announced on Friday, not on a Tuesday or on a Wednesday, as Bok fans have grown accustomed to over the last couple of years. Kanyiso, how are things going there?
Good morning, Herman. Good morning to the listeners. Well, look, I mean, we still have summery weather. I think the sun's hiding behind the clouds at the moment. So, look, all is fair so far. I mean, with the virtual press conference that we had with the Bok arriving in Paris yesterday from their lovely Toulon haunt, it's very clear that they are also going to engage in, I would call, mind games per se, because, I mean, the Bok forwards coach, Dion Davids, was asked about why the Bok are announcing the team on Friday instead of what is their normal Tuesday announcement, which would have been tomorrow. Well, he was very evasive with his response. So I think that gives us a fair idea that the Bok are more than happy to keep the French guessing in terms of how they will look on Sunday. But I think also when you look at how the Bok have set up their teams over the tournament, you actually feel that there's not a lot of guesswork. I think the remaining guesswork would be one, who they started fly off and whether Lukaku is actually going to either come off the bench or actually start. So look, they did enjoy Paris the last time they were out, but I think now the Paris business now has moved away from just the island game and just having time with the family. We are now at the proper business end of the tournament.
Yeah, can you? So it does seem like it's mind games, you know. I think for the whole tenure of Rassi and Jacques, we've always seen the team being named on a Tuesday. You know, there's some inside info that the teams or the players actually know on the Sunday already beforehand whether they're going to play or not. And now all of a sudden they're naming it on a Friday. So you'd have to think that maybe Rassi, maybe Jacques, you know, maybe who have, you know, been in cahoots there and to, you know, maybe just trying to keep the French guessing, you know, trying to think outside of the box. And obviously there's been some big talk about the fly half issue, you know, whether the Springboks will go for Andre Pollard or Marnie Lubbock at number 10. Faf de Klerk was in a press conference yesterday where he was asked about it. He seemed to be pretty evasive for me on that issue. Obviously there's some quotes coming through from Faf saying, you know, Marnie's been playing some unbelievable rugby and his organization has been amazing. But then he also goes on to say that, you know, the value that Pollard adds, you know, obviously Pollard is, a defending world champion. He played in that final in 2019. And Faf saying, you know, I'm just fortunate to be able to pass the ball to either one of them. What do you think, what are you gauging from what happened in that presser yesterday? What do you think, where are they leaning towards? Pollard or Lubbock at number 10?
Look, I think firstly it was very evasive from Swati. The person who speaks very well, but then was slightly evasive from him, because I think it's quite a selection dilemma that the Bok have, because they know what they get from the excellent Marnie Lubbock in terms of game breaking, game management, and tactical kicking. But at the quarterfinal stage, champagne rugby sometimes goes out of the window, because you just need to win, even if you win by 1 point. Then all that matters is no bonus points to be gained from a quarterfinal win. And I think the Bok are cognizant of the fact that they cannot afford to leave points on the ground like they did in the two games against Ireland. Remember, they lost in Dublin because, yes, they blamed, rightfully so, their inability to convert opportunities to 22. But one also needs to look at the fact that in those games, a total of 18 points were missed across both games, and those points were crucial to the outcome of the game. And the thing is, with the World Cup, you don't have another test match the following week to fix that. You miss those 5-6 points and you lose, you go home. So it's a difficult conundrum that the Bok are facing, because they need to value building an innings, because I think at the end of the day, this is a France team that is well conditioned. It's a France team that is resilient. So they're not going to be the soft touches that Scotland were in the second half in Marseille. They will have wells of, they'll be playing, it's a home game for France. I mean, of the 80,000 fans that will be at, or the 78,000 fans that will be at the start in France, one would think that 77,000 will be from this thing, will be from, will be home fans. So, I mean, the Boks are playing with a fair amount of pressure behind them because they're the away team. They would have had a very, not a scarring experience, a very good experience of how it is to play against France in France. And I mean, France, if you look at how they underperformed at the 2007 World Cup, they have every reason to want to do well in this World Cup. They have a team that can definitely win this World Cup. I think what becomes key for France now is to make sure that when they actually pick their best team, one, and the Boks also need to do the same. So, look, the teams are evenly matched, so I think it will just become a battle of balls now.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly that. Obviously, big news from the French camp yesterday when it was confirmed, the French medical director, Bruno Boussac, Sagnol confirmed that Antoine Dupont, the talisman skipper and scrum half, was given the all clear to start training. So what that essentially means is you can assume that he's going to be fit to play and he's going to start. I think I see there's also now being talks of the French have said that they're going to let Dupont take full training, full contact in training, but they're also going to do it very intelligently. And there's now even talks of him wearing a scrum cap, which he hasn't done before. He doesn't normally play with a scrum cap. The team doctor is quoted here as saying, you know, his vision nor his hearing can't be affected by it because obviously there's going to be an awful lot of noise, as you said, 80,000 people in the stadium. What do you make of that? Do you think the French are rushing Dupont back? You know, doing this sort of almost a makeshift thing of having him play with a scrum cap. You know, it's a similar injury that has ruled Makazole Mpimpi out of the World Cup now for the Springboks, and it seems like the Pont with the same injury, you know, he's recovered very quickly, like almost inside 3 weeks, and he's ready to go again. What's your take on that? Do you think it's a desperate move from the French? Is the Pont that so good that they actually believe that they're not the favourites if he doesn't play?
Indeed, Dupont is the best player in his position in the world. It's scrum off. There is no doubting that. And they understand that even though that there was tentative belief that it could be ready for the semifinal, France aren't just going to walk into the semifinal. I think the stature of the opposition also kind of dictates that they actually need to get their best player back and just roll the dice. It's a gamble for them. I think if France are playing Fiji, in the quarterfinals, they would have risked going in with Maxime Luku. And on the scrum off, his name just escapes me at the moment.
But I think Quilo.
The stature of it.
Sorry, Drugs.
Yeah. I mean, No. Thank you for that. I thought actually they made a big mistake by actually omitting Baptiste Rat from this particular 33-man group, because I think then France would have been happy to go in with Baptiste Rat and yes, Maxime Luku and scrum off, because they are not in Dupont's class, but they are. I mean, Serra is actually world class himself. It's just that he's got it's the Nick Evans Dan Carter issue, where Nick Evans, if for any other country, will start, but Dan Carter was just better. But I think they realize that look, it's a last chance saloon, because they'll say he'll be ready for the semifinals. Sure, he gets ready, but then what happens then when France gets knocked out? They're not going to host another tournament, let's say, in the next few cycles. So this is, and by then, Dupont has retired. And one needs to look at how much resources France has thrown into the tournament. If you look at the resources that France has thrown into the junior rugby, they feel that this World Cup will be the crowning moment of the work they've put into their junior rugby in the past 10 years. I mean, they've won 4 consecutive under-20 world championships at the moment, and they expect to build themselves a proper rugby dynasty. However, though, for the groups that won in 2017 and 2018, they've now evolved into what they have now. If they are not in a position to capitalize on that wave of momentum and win a World Cup at home, they feel that the efforts will be wasted. So, I mean, look, I think every country who will host the tournament would have actually pulled off the same list. I think New Zealand, for example, if they had, if Bowden Barrett had the same injury in this tournament as in New Zealand, they would have actually pushed the risk because they know what to take for them. I think it would have been the same with England if they had a key playmaker. I mean, look at the kind of noise they raised with Owen Farrell being suspended, and it turned out that they actually quite didn't miss him in his absence. But, I mean, again, when you look at Antoine Dupont, he is the heart and soul of that France team. Yes, they didn't have a challenging game after the All Blacks game to see whether they'll fall short about him. But the box come with a different challenge that they know that without their talisman could be quite an uphill battle for them.
Yeah, no doubt. It's maybe not a good omen from a South African perspective. It reminds me a bit of maybe this World Cup is written in the stars for France. You know, obviously there was South Africa was in contention to host actually this World Cup, and it was actually came as a big surprise that the French were then picked as hosts for 2023. You know, it reminds me a bit of 95 when, you know, you'll recall South Africa played against France in the semi-finals, and there was a very contentious call right at the end when the French almost scored in Durban in the semi-finals. And then obviously the box went through to win the tournament. We had André Joubert playing that final with a broken hand. US Van Vestesen played with a cracked rib, if I recall correctly. But you know, like you said, now those players were really vital for the box, and it seems like it's the same issue with Dupont. You know, they're doing everything they can to put him in because they sort of think, you know, they feel this is their World Cup, and it could be an absolute catastrophe for the host nation if they were to go out on Sunday night in the quarterfinals already.
No, it is. It's an interesting undercurrent that you raise because it's a topic that we've quite, not to avoid it here in France, but I mean, the manner in which France got the right to host that World Cup remains very contentious. Whether South Africa would have been in decent enough shape to host the World Cup, when you look at what's happening with our country at the moment, and maybe it may not have been such a bad thing at the time. But look, I mean, there's that undercurrent. Look, I mean, that trial you're referring to is Abdelatif Benassi. Yes. Derek Bevan was probably handed South Africa a World Cup final on the silver platter because in the TMO era, that's a try 8 days a week.
Yeah, from
the movie. So, yeah. Look, there's that undercurrent. And actually, now that you raise that, one needs to remember that that's the last time these two teams actually met in a World Cup game. They've never made at group stages. They met in that game and then they haven't met since. So there's been a 28-year void where France and South Africa haven't met at World Cups. And in that time, South Africa went through dips like the 2003 World Cup. France have been to two finals that they lost in Cardiff. They lost in Auckland. South Africa, the two finals that they've been to in Paris 2007, in Yokohama 2019, they've won. And I think there's also the overriding sense here in the Northern Hemisphere that this is their turn, this is their chance. I mean, if you look at all the pools, all four pools were won by Northern Hemisphere teams. France winning Pool A, Ireland winning Pool B, England winning Pool C, Ireland winning Pool D. Wales winning Pool D. The strength of Pool C and Pool D, they need to be taken into context. One would feel that if a South Africa or New Zealand were involved in those pools, one thing that I think the outcomes there would be rather different. But look, you play what's in front of you, and one would feel that the other teams have built up momentum. At the end of the day, their World Cup claims will definitely be tested because the semifinals will be cross-pool. So whoever succeeds from that side of the draw will have to play whoever wins from our side of the draw. So there is a very positive sentiment that the tides are changing. I've been very surprised by rugbypass.com's sentiment around the World Cup. They, yes, we understand that the World Cup, that part is owned by World Rugby, but they have a very Northern Hemisphere heavy sentiment. They seem to be very happy that the Northern Hemisphere has dominated the pool stages, that out of the 16 possible games they've played, they've won all 16. But I think the proof again will be in the pudding because whatever, you may build up your momentum through the pool stages. But then again, you've got a team of South Africa Yes, it's a different World Cup. But in 2019, they finished second in their pool. But they beat teams atop the pool in throughout to get to the finals. I mean, they beat Japan atop their pool. They beat Wales atop their pool. They beat England atop their pool. So, again, look, you may go through your particular emotions in the pool stage, but what you really do in the quarterfinals is win the tournament. As I think, not people rightly say, we've had some really nice results, some very good rugby in the group stage, but I think the proof of the knockout that we put in will definitely be seen over this weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. Trucks, talking about Derek Bevan aiding the box in that 95 semi-final, the referees for this Saturday, this weekend's encounters haven't been confirmed yet. We're waiting on that. I think today is going to be the day that they're going to confirm it. And I think obviously a lot of Springbok fans are waiting with bated breath to see who will be the referee for Sunday night's match. Obviously, you've mentioned, you know, an 80,000 strong crowd awaits the Springboks on Sunday night. It's not going to be a pro Springbok crowd. We saw last Friday when France played Italy what an influence the crowd can have on a referee making a 50-50 call. Is that a worry for you heading into Sunday? You know, it's bound to be a tight match. You can't see one or the other team winning by a big margin. Is it a worry for you that maybe, you know, those 50-50 calls, you know, the referee could be influenced by a pro-French crowd? Or do you think it's going to be a fair contest?
Definitely. No. Definitely. I mean, Marseille was an eye-opening experience last year. I mean, we know the power of that Ellis Park crowd when a referee makes a decision that is anti-South Africa. You know how we were all together at the URC final when calls didn't go the Stormers' way. You thought that the roof was going to come off at the Cape Town Stadium. That's very much the same with Loftus and Bloom. So, look, it is going to have an impact because at the end of the day, referees aren't machines, they're human beings. They need to make decisions. And they need to make decisions with their careers in mind because, I mean, look at how Craigie Bear made that decision that was pro Australia against Scotland in 2015. Yes. Remember that Scotland have yet to make the playoffs since then. That's how deep. That's how terminal that call was for Scotland because they were on the cusp of making the first ever World Cup semi-final. That was taken away from them by what was the wrong call by Craigie Bear. They haven't proceeded past the group stage since. So look at this. The referees, who will be the match official? Not just the referees. Remember that they come as a group. If a TMO puts out a flag for a decision that goes against France, they're going to get a barracking from the fans because they are closer to the fans than anyone else. If the far side match official makes a call that goes against France, all four of them, including the TMO, because the TMO may be in the stadium, slightly insulated from whatever will transpire on the field and in the crowd, they will know the kind of pressure the referees under because they are the eyes and ears of the referee. They will have to, I mean, even understandably so, it is a rugby World Cup production where, in inverted commas, the producers will have to make all angles available. But I mean, we also need to be honest with ourselves and understand that you want a World Cup is generally sustainable based on the home team's availability. More so with this World Cup, with how France have changed. Yes, should France lose, there'll still be interest in the semifinals, but will they be the same interest? It remains to be seen. I'm not throwing out a conspiracy theory here, but we need to understand that France have everything. There's everything at stake for France in this game. This is probably the game that will hinge their World Cup because they could get in the semifinals, lose, and they'll still have maybe the consolation of a third place playoff. But this is where everything that they've done over the past 4 to 6 years comes to a boil. Because remember, you exit in the quarterfinals, that's it. You don't have the luxury of you don't even calling it the luxury of a semifinal. You don't even have the post-mortems from a quarterfinal exit are far harsher than that of a semifinal because in a semifinal things can go anywhere. There's always the feeling that you can still control particular outcomes in a quarterfinal. But again, mistakes can be made by the referee, by the team. So the matchup is the TMO Banker, where they do not explain who are in the TMO Banker. They will also be feeling the pressure, because if a France player makes a mistake, I mean, if you remember Romain Taufoudoua, for example, I think it was in the Namibia game, he should have been sent off for that head catch. He was only given a yellow card. That yellow card should have been converted into a red card, and he should have actually had a sustained exit. Already, that was a sign, now that you look back, that was a sign that the Banker chicken out of making the correct decision. Whereas it was so easy for them to make the correct decision on the Johan Dessel in the very same game. I think that was the Uruguay game here, where Taufoudoua was being sent off. And then in the following game, the decision was pretty much easy for the Banker to turn Dessel's yellow card into a red card. So that entire officiating team, the on-field, the TMO, and the Banker that's not named, they are going to be under massive pressure, especially when, if let's say France make an infringement in the box of 22 and they need to score, will that particular match official make that decision that goes against France and puts France out of the tournament?
I mean,
or with the box training,
And that's all the boos. I mean, there's going to be loud cheers or boos from the crowd. It's certainly going to have an influence. But thanks for that, Trotz.
And what you guys experience on TV, sorry, Herman, what you guys experience on TV is far removed from what happened on the field. I remember when Sipili Falatea scored that try, and the play and the replays weren't available. I mean, Wayne Barnes, an experienced referee, was absolutely frazzled. You saw that he wanted to request the visuals, but they weren't available to him. And the absolute pressure that he got from that crowd, and remember that was a 64,000 crowd. He's going to get 12,000 more at the start of France. So good luck to the referee.
Thank you, Trox. Certainly, it's going to be a major talking point, one feels. Whether it's going to be a positive or a negative for the Springboks, we'll have to wait and see. But I think we'll wait with bated breath today to see who the referees are, and let's hope, as far as humanly possible, that the most correct decisions could be made, and we can see a fair contest. What is true is it's going to be one hell of a spectacle in front of 80,000 people between two very, very strong sides. Thanks for that, Traku. We'll let you run off. I know there's a Bok presser on the way later this afternoon, so good luck with that, and we'll catch up tomorrow again. Thank you very much. That was episode 22 of News 24's Inside Pass. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be right back.